Thank you. Hi, my name is Magnus and I'm a drug addict. The problem here is probably because we're in Sweden and we're not that far away yet with the technology. Can you hear me okay? Yeah, good. So yeah, thanks for having me here, and I'm very grateful that that I'm sitting here today. I've been thinking quite a lot about my life story when Lee asked me if I could speak in front of you today, and I will go back to my childhood briefly, how it formed me into the human being I became. In my world, it was sports, and I will take you through that. And I think it's important that even though I played professionally in my sport, I think it's important to try to find the likenesses, to find the similarities, even though I had my sports. But so what I'm going to talk about a lot is confirmation, performing rather than being a human being. So it was one of those things that I've noticed now since I came into CA, that it's very, very common thing that we have to do something in order to feel that we were always being on our way, never stop in the moment and take in the life that we have. So I hope that's okay with you. So I grew up with my mom and dad. They divorced when I was 4 years old. I remember already now back then that my dad was really pedantic. He wanted everything to be spot on, and my mother was totally opposite. So when she picked me up from nursery or whatever, I kind of felt scared going home because I knew they were going to end up in a fight because they were so different as human beings. They divorced when I was four. I moved and I stayed with my mom's, and I had to stay with my neighbors quite a lot, and I didn't really realize why. She was ill quite a lot. What I know now is was because of the alcohol, but then it was all sorts of things like pain, stomach pain, headache, and all of those sorts of things. Lies, obviously. But then again, I was quite young, so maybe they didn't want to put me in front of the big problem that she had. What happened to me then was that I was probably six, seven years old. What happened to me is that I kind of capsuled myself into to become protected in some way. I started to play football, ice hockey, did taekwondo, and I was almost never home. Straight away after school, I went to my training sessions. When I came home, I just left my bag and went out to play with my friends. Came home for dinner and then straight back to straight to bed. So what happened there to me was that I kind of find my substance, my favorite substance, which became sports. A bit healthier than drugs, of course. Even though it kind of saved me, because I remember in older age that when I had problems, as soon as I put my foot onto the pitch, I kind of swept them away. The problems that I had privately, I could just sweep them away. So that became my addiction, football. I played on. I became professional in 97 when I went to the UK, to Coventry City. I played with Coventry until 2002 when I left for Celtic. And then I went to Italy, and then I went back to Chelsea. Was with Chelsea for 8 months, and this was 2007. When I retired. So I retired from Chelsea, came home, and straight away when I came back, I was working as a TV pundit and did quite a lot of speeches about how to become a good team and so on. But there was this question all the time, what am I going to do next? What am I going to do next? Yeah. Because I kind of lost myself. I stopped with the one addiction, which was my football, which was my escape. And I didn't know what to do, really. Because being a TV pundit, that wasn't really you know, I didn't see that as a job because it was just sitting in front of a camera. It wasn't playing in front of 60,000 spectators or winning, losing, the pain and everything that football is involved in football. So there was this late summer morning when I was really hangover, 2007, and this guy asked me if I, well, he looked at me and said, Jesus, you look, you don't look too healthy. And I said, no, I'm really, really tired. And he said, well, I got something that really will make you alert. I said, what's that? He said, no, it's good. Yeah, but what is it? It's amphetamine. And it kind of went through my head like, I've almost never taken an aspirin, you know, and he's asking me for amphetamine. But the disease took me there by making me think, okay, but hold on, I haven't got a game next week. I'm not representing any club, no international team or nothing. So I said yes. And I got in a cup of coffee, and that second that I put that to my mouth, it was, you know, obviously a big disappointment for myself. But when it kicked in, it was the best feeling I ever had. The best feeling. I fell in love with it straight away. You couldn't compare that to winning a game of football. This was perfect. It was just the way that I wanted to feel. And all those problems and all those questions I had about what am I going to do next? What am I going to do next? They kind of disappeared. And I did stupid things you can imagine. It went quick for me. It went down very fast for me. I took amphetamine every day for about 2.5 years. Even when I sat in doing TV speeches, I was high most of the days. Hard to go to sleep as well. Very difficult. So at my worst stage, in the end, there before I quit, I was awake, looking out of the window. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Oh, there you are. So I remember laying in my bed, looking out through the window, and I saw this police climbing up a tree outside my house. So that's how gone I was in my head. So that's when I said to myself, okay, you have to quit, which I did. But I was drinking alcohol. Even though I quit drugs, I was drinking alcohol. Well, we know what happens with that kind of story. So in the end, I kept myself clean from drugs for about 2.5 years and 3 years almost. But I took a relapse, of course, but then into cocaine. And it was quite difficult for me because, you know, no one knew about my problems. But when that became public, when I got arrested, once I had 63 in the newspapers back home here in Sweden, which made me obviously retire totally into my couch, laying in my couch, very depressed. And from my world, in football, I always have the tools to know what to do. But I just felt like a really bad person, like a weak person. I didn't know really what to do. So For me, you know, the solution was a tablet, to find sleeping tablets, sleep the day away. Because I didn't have the tools, I didn't know where to go. I didn't have any goals with my life. I had I basically lost almost everything that I had at that stage. But then 2011, I got back on track a bit. Was still doing the cocaine and wrote a book about my problems, and it was always this performing side of, you know, of it. So I did loads of speeches. I told everyone, yeah, I've been using drugs and so on and so on, and thought that, okay, my problem is solved. Until 2014, I kind of kept myself fairly clean, and then I took a relapse, and it went fast down, really fast. And I tried, and I tried. I tried just taking cocaine. And on a Friday, I tried. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we still got you.
Yeah, Jack. Good. It's... Sorry.
Magnus, is ideal. It's not ideal, I know, but sometimes if you turn your camera off, your audio will be fine. So if you, because it's trying to pull your video and your audio. So if you turn your video off, just switch your camera off. Sometimes it won't cut out so much. So if you want to try that.
Okay. Yeah. Stop video.
Sometimes it works a bit better.
So. Can you hear me still now?
Yeah, can hear you perfectly.
Yeah, good. Yeah, so what happened there was I took my relapse. I was trying all different solutions. So I stopped here because from this time it's been 7 years. 7 years that I had my problems. It's been 5 years that it's been in the papers. No one told me that it was a disease. No one. So I blamed everything on myself. Everything. And I mean, it's obviously hard to ask someone for help. But that day came on in 2017, the 20th of November. The day before, I was going to move houses. And something dragged me out on my balcony, 8 floors up. I don't know what it was, but something dragged me there. And I wanted to stay inside, but it just, you know, dragged me there. And I sat on the balcony with my legs hanging outside, looking down. It was a number of hours. It felt like a number of hours, but it was the scariest moment of my life. And when I came in, I straight away rang a friend of mine who I knew been to CA. And that was the first time ever in my life when I asked for help. So he got me along. I don't know if you know Robert Bowman. Some of you might have met. He came home to me the day after and explained the disease, and all of a sudden things started to feel, now I at least I have a chance, because everything that I've done before in my life was it was always like a plan. The plan was always there, but I have bad memories, you know. I can't remember everything from my career because I was always on my way somewhere. I could never stay in the moment and kind of enjoy what I've achieved or the family I had, or, you know, I won a game, and as I came home that night, it was the next game. It was always the next game, and or whatever there was, and which made me, you know, I can't remember that much from my career. So that hurts me a bit still today. That I was that way, because it's, I mean, the life I've had has been phenomenal and fantastic. But not being able to stay in the moment, always thinking that I was strong on my own, cost me a lot. It did cost me a lot. But I came into to CA, really selfish, the biggest ego you can imagine. And I was really scared going to meetings because I thought, people recognize me. They will start talking about me to other people that I'm going to CA and so on and so on. And the first meeting I went to, it was actually an AA meeting. I was really, you know, tensed and nervous about people recognizing me. And my friend said to me, no, you don't have to worry. I mean, it's nothing like that, you know. It's stress. They won't say anything about anybody else and so on. And the first thing that happens is that this guy, oh, Magnus, what are you doing here? So I just wanted to do Michael Jackson's moonwalk out of the room straight away. But I stayed and I listened. And that's when, you know, I really realized that, okay, the willingness, it has to be there. I have to be willing to get the help, to capitalize, to admit that I'm totally unable to live my life the way I do. But I came into the room and I looked at the steps and I thought, step 2, 3, nah, God, no, nothing for me. Step 6, 7, God, no, I don't want to do them. So even though I was so low, I still wanted to run the show. So my sponsor, I started to listen to him and started to work in the steps. And it was quite interesting because when I kind of released that defense that I had, you remember I told you about the capsule, the defense I created as a young kid. When I started to release, open that up a bit, God came into me, to my life, where I could feel it. I mean, he's been there all the time, but I could feel it, I could notice it, I could sense it. And it was, you know, it happened quite an interesting thing because when my first prayer ever, 5 minutes later, a friend of mine calls me up and say that he's a drug addict, and that would never have happened. So that was a sign. And I think to me, the signs to be spiritual, we have to be tuned in as well. So if I, you know, kind of during a period there when I didn't do my prayers, when I didn't do my meditation, I don't see the signs the same way. I go straight into trying to solve everything on my own. So the steps to me, it's not about finding a way back. It's about creating a new version of myself to create Magnus 2.0. And it's taken time. The life outside is still there. It's easy to be nice and everything is all right during the meetings in the rooms. But then when we go out to the lives outside, that's always going to go up and down for all of us. What separates us is how we deal with it. And when I try to deal with things on my own, they don't work out that well. During my active years, I couldn't realize why my companies didn't, you know, why weren't they working? But I took cocaine Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and I slept Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So I was basically working a couple of hours a week, and I still didn't realize why are my companies doing that bad? So. Yeah, what happened when I went into to the steps was that, it, you know, bit by bit, I started to be grateful. I started to be grateful for things that happened to other people as well. And someone said to me that you're going to do things for other people. And I thought to myself, am I going to do things for other people without charging them? That doesn't seem right. Should I give them all my time and they're not going to pay me? So that's, you know, that was how my life was and how I looked at things. So I want to go into this performing bit again, because I see a big risk for a lot of people, not just addicts, that when we have to perform, because the society we live in today is very fast. It's about performing. We have the social media where we kind of value ourselves depending on how many likes we get and how many comments we get and so on and so on, how many followers, which is dangerous, of course. And when I came into CEA, I was performing in the beginning. I was performing there as well to get the confirmation that I'm really doing well and you're so good. But the more we perform, the more we lose ourselves. I kind of say this, that too strong, if your self-confidence is too strong, you're losing, you're killing your self-esteem. And that was what happened to me. So now, today, I know that the football was my drug. The football was my addiction. I know that. And I also know that I changed from one substance to another. Changing from football to amphetamine might not be the best idea, the best decision, but that was what happened. And since I started CA and since I've been through the steps and been here for a couple of years now, I've always started to also look back onto my life, and codependency is something that is a very, very strong thing for me. My mom, as I told you about, I was abused when I was a kid, which obviously also creates this empty hole inside of you. So I always been there, my all grown up life, I've always been there to praise or to, to sort things out for other people, playing in front of people, playing for clubs, trying to solve my friends' problems and so on and so on. Always trying to fit in whatever the room I am in, I'm always going to fit in. Today is just, I'm me. I'm worth not being perfect. And that is such a nice feeling that I don't have to perform. My companies are doing fantastic these days, but that's not because of me. That's because of the people working for me. So I can be grateful and thankful and not having to put the flag up, oh, look at me, I've done this, I've done that. My name, I didn't manage, but my name has been cleared in Sweden. So the world of football has taken me back. I'm helping a lot of people in the game. I have 5 sponsees that I'm working with on a daily basis today, and it just makes me more and more happy. I have God in my life, and I have days when I worry. I have days when I don't feel that, on top. But that's not a problem to me today, because I can let in the feelings. And I don't have to have all solutions myself. Just calling my sponsor or someone else in CA is enough. So, it's been a very up and down life that I've had. The difference to me and a lot of other people is that I've had to deal with the media, with the press, and that's a fight you never win, because we all know how the press can be, and if they start hitting on you, you fast down in the bottom in their eyes, and in the eyes of the public as well. So how does my life look today? I run 3 companies. It's not like I'm overworking it. I have employed people, so I can have a good balance. I go to meetings 3-4 times a week. I have my sponsees. I do a lot of training to feel good, but I'm also going to do a TV show in August where I have to be fit, so which will be on TV. So I have a goal. I have a reason to train, which is great to have. And then I have my 2 kids, Lance and Tristan. I spend a lot of time with them. My relations with them is fantastic.
Hi, Magnus.
Eh? Okay. So my relation to them is fantastic. My relation to my ex-wife is fantastic. Listen to that one. How did that happen? It's a life where I wake up. I know that the way I see it is that my disease wakes up before me will not be the best teams. I've had it all my career. Are you there? Thumbs up if you hear me. Yeah, good. Yeah, lovely. And the routines, I lost the routines because I didn't have anywhere to go. And I think that's a big big problem for a lot of us, is that we don't find our path. We're trying different things. the more things that doesn't work out for me, I'm gonna get lost and feel even worse. And that's what happened to me as well. I didn't have those goals. I didn't know what to do the next day and the next day. So today it's kind of different because everybody asks me, "Oh, so what's your vision with your companies?" And I can't really answer them. You know, it's and that's, it feels strange because I can't give them a 5-year vision of my companies. Maybe that's wrong. I don't know, but I'm not scared, but I'm cautious with moving along or moving ahead too much. So, you know, I let God decide what's going to happen. That's makes me feel a lot more calm and instead of me trying to create everything and deciding how things should be. And things are coming to me. I remember when people said that when I came in to see you, oh, there's so many nice things will happen to you and you won't believe it. And I thought, sure, what will happen to me? I'm going to have to do it myself. So it's, it's easy for me to sit here and say, everything is so, so good. Yeah, it is fantastic in comparison, of course. And we had a few people that lost their lives last year because of relapses, and it was the same for all of them, that they thought that they knew how to do it on their own, and I don't, and we know that we can't, because I went to Los Angeles last year and came back and jet lagged and so on, and I was so close to taking a relapse. I went to the cash point, we drew money, and I stood with the money in my hand and went to a meeting. So thank God for that, because that was the closest, and I was jet lagged. I hadn't done my my step work, I didn't do the meditation and so on, and that's how fast it happens. It just takes me slightest of chances for the disease, and it will get me straight away. So it's a matter of living a respectful life without trying to perform. I'm not going to be a slave. I don't want to be a slave under the performing part, the confirmation. They're always trying to, people confirm you that you're so good and praise you. I don't want that anymore. I'd rather praise others and one other thing that I like to share is that when I came in, I had this saying. Well, I said to myself, so how funny is my life going to be without cocaine and alcohol and so on? I mean, my party was quite exclusive because I was the only one at that party in my couch, so it was very, very exclusive. I was also thinking about friends. Who am I going to socialize with? Because everybody's drinking. And looking at the CA members, I was looking at a lot of them and thinking, I'm never going to have a coffee with them. And today I have so many phone numbers. I don't judge anyone with considering how they look or what clothing they're wearing or whatever the case might be. They're just a human being like I am. And that is a bit of hallelujah, but I have to be cautious because they did a documentary about me about 4 months ago that was shown on one of the TV channels here. And I really, really thought to myself, why am I doing it? Is it because I want my the glory again, or my, was it my selfishness, or why? And I did it because I wanted to do a 12-step. And that's what I'm really working on a lot here, using my position as a public person to not to teach people, but to tell people that there is help and that it is a disease, because no one told me that. And that's still not talked about enough, I think. We know the how difficult it is, but I think that's, God gave me that opportunity to help people by telling them that it is a disease and that it is a solution as well. They can see that on me. They can see that on in the documentary and all the articles and things I've done. But so I've decided to be very open about it. Does that put pressure on me? Yeah, it might do. But I don't feel it now. I know that if I'm living life the way I should, doing what is asked of me, considering the steps and so on, I will be okay. And it was interesting, after the documentary, I had hundreds of messages on my Instagram and LinkedIn and so on, where I could direct people. And that was just a fantastic feeling. I mean, imagine that, instead of just feeling, oh, I was so good, I had so many views and so on and so on, I could really help. And then to me, it would have been enough helping one person, but there was so many, and there was women who had their husband was an addict and so on. I could send them to Kohanon, and where I am myself at the moment. I'm doing the steps in Kohanon now. That feeling is just fantastic, to be able to help people that I don't even know. No matter how far down we are, we have the chance if we don't try to do it ourselves. So, as I said in the beginning, I'm really grateful that you are here and that I am here. And I think I'm done there. It feels okay to me. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Magnus. It was so great to hear you, and what a lovely message. And it's always so brave to speak out about these things, and absolutely, we must where we can, I think. So we're going to open up for a Q&A. So if anybody's got any questions, you can pop them in the chat box, then we'll ask them live to Magnus, and he'll come back and answer. So feel free to post away.
I think also anyone who wants to feel free to just put their hand up and come in and ask Magnus a question if you didn't want to type that in. You're also free to do that. Sorry, Laura.
So, all right, I see that Stuart Doherty's got a question.
Oh, hi, yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, hi, Magnus. Hi. It's great to hear your story, and I apologise, obviously, it's my first time on Zoom. On this, so I was unmuted at one point, so I'm not sure whether anyone could hear me or not. What I will say is that I'm a big football fan, I'm a big Man United fan, and I have watched you play. When I was on the terraces as a young lad, watching the likes of yourselves, I was obviously in a crowd, and that was at the start of my, you know, debauchery, if you like. What I would say what I used to see was 22 players on a football pitch, that actually, you know, you just thought they had the perfect life. They were great. So it's great to hear your story, and the fact that you actually realise that actually everyone is, you're not what you are, you're who you are. And the addiction thing and what you had going on in your private life was something that you never even considered as a football fan on the pitch. So I just want to say thanks. I just want to say thanks for hearing that. I've recently relapsed. My sponsor put me onto this Zoom today, which is the first thing that he told me to do, says get back on it, get to Zoom. And it's amazing that I've actually connected with somebody that I've actually seen play football as a professional on the pitch, and to hear that side of the story of someone that, you know, and it makes me realise that, you know, your story has been pretty emotional to me today. I'm glad he did it, and I'm glad you did it, so thank you. That's all I want to say.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Stuart. A message from the floor, which is from Vicky. What's the biggest gift that recovery has given you?
The biggest gift is there's two that comes up into my mind now. The first one is the relation to my kids, my relationship to my kids. It's been taking a while for them to kind of started to trust me. My youngest one, who's 15, which I know is codependent. He's kind of like, "Dad, have you been to CA today? Or when was the last time you've been to CA?" So he's really there all the time. But no, my relationship to them is fantastic today. And the reason to that, step the number two here, is that that I'm managing being honest and, you know, admitting when I'm wrong. Not all the time straight away, but most of the times. And that is just such a great gift that I've received. So yeah, and obviously, I mean, God is helping me with all this, and but if I wanted to pinpoint two things, those are the ones.
Thanks so much. Lee has his hand up, if you want to come in, Lee.
Hello Magnus, good to see you, mate. My name's Lee and I'm a recovered addict. And
hi Lee.
In early recovery, I was always taught, and it was something I had to watch for, was that I didn't get addicted to things outside of mind-altering substances, like the gym or, you know, buying clothes or, you know, looking for something outside of me to fix me. Do you find that you can still get addicted to behaviors that make you feel better? So other things outside of drugs?
I know that they are there. The risk is there all the time. I know that, but I'm being cautious. I'm not gambling, you know, just, you know, a fiver on a game or just for fun. I'm not doing that. I'm having balance in my work. I don't open my emails during the weekends, for an example. Before, I could sit all weekends tonight, with a little help from the drugs, but anyway, so no, the risk is there, I know that, and I kind of, I don't know really, because the competition I'm going to do in August on TV, I don't know how I will react to that, because I don't know if that winning mentality is still there, so I'm kind of curious to find out who will I be when it's competition again, you know. But no, I agree with you, but I haven't really gone into it, but no, I did actually, about a year ago when I went to this program called 16 Weeks of Hell, where you lose weight and build muscles. And I kind of posted every single day on Instagram until my sponsor said, "Have you looked at your behavior the last couple of weeks?" And I said, "Yeah, why, what's, I just want to help people. No, is it really?" So yeah, I went into the training. So the risk is there all the time.
Thanks so much, Magnus. We'll move to another written question, which is from Carl. Given you've had a great deal of media interest in your story, when you were in your early days, what tools did you find most useful around the concerns you had over what others thought of you, which must have been quite overpowering?
Working harder and harder and harder, focusing more and more on myself. It was about prioritizing things, which, if there was something that wasn't 100% and someone started to say bad things or things that weren't great, I just went more and more into myself. So if we look at the disease, we know that we go more and more, we draw ourselves away from others. And it kind of, you know, was the same way here, that in order to protect myself from that, I was creating something just harder and harder. I was training harder than anybody else. I went away. I never went to a party. I didn't go downhill skiing, which is a big thing in Sweden, because I could injure myself and so on. So in very early age, I was so focused on becoming something. And then when it came to media, the press people has said to me that I was the best one interviewing. Why? Because there with us, you were always speaking to us. Of course I was. I wanted my name in the paper. So that I mean, to me, it was like, I kind of enjoyed that. And I saw media as a part of my career. I had to do the interviews because it was part of the football, the life of football. But I mean, you can imagine how that water your ego, how just selfishness just grow and grow and grow and grow. So, yeah, that I don't know if that was a clear answer to your question. I hope it was, but yeah, the behavior was already there as it was in my life after as well.
Thank you so much. We'll take a final question from the floor and then move on to a quick break with the next speaker, who will start at 5. AB, do you want to ask your question?
Yeah, my name's Anthony and I'm an addict. Thank you for your share, Magnuson. So basically, I've come to learn that, you know, the steps are about the destruction of self, and I have to push into step 11, and I realize step 3 tells me this ain't about me, because I've done the deal. What's your step 11 like, you know, your practices, spiritual practices?
Today they are really, really good. It took me a while. I mean, it was good in the beginning while I was doing the steps and shortly after, but as life happened, I kind of lost both step 10 and 11. Well, lose. I just didn't do them. Today, it's in my daily routines, but it's also things that is not, you know, in my routines. If something occurred during the day or things like that. So today, my spiritual, I don't know how you say it in English, but I'm there. I'm tuned in. I'm in contact with my higher power, and I can definitely fairly quick see that on myself if the way I react to others. That's a really big thing for me, that I can straight away sense if I'm not doing what I should do.
Thank you.
Thank you.